possibly be, you can't possibly be sad when you hear that kind of music. Master Conguero Poncho Sanchez and his band with something he calls Next Exit. It's from his 2001 album, Latin Spirits. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And you know what day it is. It's not just Friday, it is Free Your Mind Friday. And this is the day you get to decide what you think is most important. You call the shots, you take us where you want this conversation to go. It's all up to you. At 888-874-4888, things are happening at lightning speed. And I don't know if we could keep up with it. Every couple of minutes, something changes, and we find ourselves deeper and deeper in the morass that we've been dealing with since Donald Trump got elected. All right, let's start in Chicago. Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, Trees, how's it going?
Okay, how's about you?
It's okay. It's okay. Want to wish you and the rest of the TRN Lead Stories audience a happy and safe weekend.
You know, that's as good as gold these days. Thank you so much.
All right. So, developments this week in Chicago, a surprising announcement from Mayor Rahm Emanuel on Tuesday. I'm not sure if you heard about this, and I was surprised this
Yes, I
wasn't.
heard that you cried like a baby when he announced he was so sad. You were
Well,
inconsolable.
oh my God. So, just to let everybody know, the current mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, has decided not to run next year for re-election. He has decided to step down after his term is over with next May. He said that, you know, it was because of family issues. Many here in Chicago have believed that a referendum actually had just a couple of weeks ago, we just had a referendum that just had got enough signatures to get onto the ballot on November. And this referendum states that mayor to put cap on mayor term limits here in Chicago. So if that would have passed, he wouldn't have been able to run anyway. So I think this was more of a graceful type of, because I think he believed that that referendum was going to pass in November. So now that he has decided to step down because he was going to be the huge favorite to win in the next mayoral election, the race is basically kind of wide open now. I believe right now there are officially, I think it's like 10 people running for mayor. So we have officially 10 people running for mayor. And then there are like many others who said they weren't going to run who are now considering it. Luis Gutierrez is one. I think Chewy's talking about running again, but he's not sure. And then we have a Cook County Board President, Tony Preppwinkle, who is considering it. So now Chicago is in an uncertain situation now. But it is a situation that can be taken advantage of by the people of Chicago. Since now this race is kind of wide open, somebody can take advantage of this. How well will this go? I'm not sure. So,
All right, so let me ask you a couple of questions. Is there
okay.
anything odd about the timing? You talked about the timing of Rahm Emanuel. What else is happening in the world of politics that would or should cause you to review the timing of Rahm Emanuel's announcement that he will not run again for mayor?
Well, you know, you got the Laquan McDonald issue. The trial of the cop who murdered Laquan McDonald or Jason Van Dyke. That trial is actually happening next week. That is looming over the Chicago's head right now, and that could be another factor. of why he...
Well, I'm talking about big politics, not small politics. The world of big politics.
So nationwide, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well...
Your former Chicago president is cranking things up as of next week.
Yes, he is. And that's another... One of the candidates that's been, like... that's been kind of rumored to maybe step in, and I'm hoping this is not true, because Ron has specifically stated that all of the candidates that's on the ballot right now running, he's not supporting. But there is one guy that we are basically afraid of that might run and could possibly win is Arne Duncan. And I am hoping that's not true.
and who is Arne Duncan? Because I heard you're such a big fan.
Oh, God. So Arne Duncan is the... he was the former Secretary of Education with a bachelor's degree.
He needed an education. That's why he was appointed by Obama to be Secretary of Education.
Which he would probably not qualify for a lot of superintendent jobs across the country. So, for a person who could not qualify for, I will probably say, 90% of the superintendent jobs in a lot of the public schools, how did he become Secretary of Education of the nation is beyond me. So,
well, I have the answer. I know exactly how that happened. He played basketball with Barack Obama.
Yes, yes. It was meant to be sarcastic, you see.
That's how he ended up as secretary. And, of course, he comes from a lot of money. So those two elements led to his successful tenure as Secretary of Education.
Did that answer your question, or did I pinpoint to the question, or?
No, that was it. That was the, I wanted you to just, or to have us just make a link so people can kind of see how politics really works. So that the announcement by Rahm Emanuel that he is not seeking re-election means that he is turning his attention somewhere else, and that now you have to look at what are the other moving parts of this political decision. And we see we have the Chicago foundation of brother Barack Obama is going to becoming very interesting, having a very interesting role to play. We'll be talking about the Barack Obama Foundation, because there's a big matter that has not yet been resolved about that foundation, and that has to do with land grabbing and misrepresenting what it is that it is supposed to do. So we'll get to that. But it's an interesting turn of events, no matter how you look at it.
Well,
thanks for getting us.
One more thing, too, is the upcoming Illinois gubernatorial election that's coming up. So I'm interested to see what's going to happen in November with that as well. But that's it.
This is a time to keep your eyes open and don't believe anything that they say. Believe only half of what you hear. Just keep yourself alert. That's all. It's politics, you know. Thanks, Henry, for getting us started today. Bill from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yatrice, and to the lead story family.
Thank you.
I'm calling
good afternoon
you're
to
welcome.
You, too.
Thank you. I'm calling about the conversations you've had over the past couple of days. And yesterday I was somewhat frustrated. I mean, all of the callers are brilliant in their own way, but you asked very pointed and specific questions that no one seemed to really answer. And that is, you know, in light of what's going on with Mr. Donald J. Trump and all the revelations that have come out recently that clearly show we have a certifiably mentally unstable person in office, what are we as individuals and groups going to do about it? And I got the sense that people wanted to get all, I mean, they were just sort of spiraling around and not really getting to the source, and wanted to somewhat go around the issue in terms of technicalities. But the thing is that the American house, so to speak, is burning down. And we just can't stand around and watch and sort of twiddle our thumbs and try to come up with, you know, sort of philosophical approaches to this. And so that was something that I just wanted to call about, and that people just really aren't answering the specific questions as you have instructed them to do. And I go back to what my third grade teacher used to always say is follow directions. And so and so on that point, we as individuals and in our communities, there are actions that we can do, and we can put pressure on our elected officials to get off, you know, their rear ends and to organize communities. I mean, I live in Brooklyn, and we have Congress people here, and every week there should be at least one or two buses going down and getting on the steps of the Capitol and shouting and yelling and demanding that there's some action be taken. And so there are things that we can do. And so we don't have time to be all philosophical. I mean, we're watching a nightmare in progress. And so, but those are my two cents. So I just wanted to express that.
Well, could you give us an idea of how you individually are dealing with it?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I'm doing individually is calling and writing my elected officials, none of which have responded to me. That is Mr. Jeffries here in Brooklyn, and Christian Gillibrand and Mr. Charles Schumer specifically. I have called, and it's not it's just when you call and you get a voicemail to your congressperson or senator's office, to me that is not acceptable in the middle of the week. I mean, we are constituents, and they are responsible to us. And so taking action such as that, and also just having a discourse with family and friends and others of like mind about what is occurring and how you know, we need to prepare for what's coming. There's all kinds of right-wing kind of nationalist movements going on as we speak. Trump is on a perpetual campaign to garner his base in preparation for the midterm elections coming up in several weeks. And so we, as individuals and community people, we have to kind of mobilize ourselves and get out the word that these, you know, as, and I know you have reservations about voting, but in our communities, we must take a stand and go out and do everything we can, because we are in very, very dangerous times. And just like people in Germany and Italy with Hitler and Mussolini tried to be all philosophical and, you know, twiddle their thumbs, they saw what happened. And this country is not beyond that at all, I believe.
Personally, are you feeling, well, I have to use the word afraid. Are you feeling afraid about what's happening? Or
yes,
are you
absolutely
feeling that there has to be something that the people can do?
Well, I'm feeling afraid because I think that we as individuals in our communities aren't mobilized and aren't really insisting that our elected officials do something. What are the Democrats and the Green Parties and other like-minded people who represent us, what are they doing? There's nothing happening on Capitol Hill that I can see. And, you know, they're collecting their $175,000 salaries, and, you know, they show up every, you know, few months and, you know, sort of glad hand people. But what are they doing? And so that's what's frightening me, and that they're, you know, they're not doing anything. And that's why it's our responsibility to really call them to action, because we are in dangerous times with this man in office and even with his vice president. Not that it would make anything much better, but something must be done to hold these people to account. And otherwise, we're going to, you know, be very sad folks come the first week of November.
Well, I think you're onto something there, but I think we're being too kind.
Okay.
We're being too understanding. We're being too forgiving. This is a time where you have to lop heads off. In as much mm-hmm. as we have the energy that says we are not supposed to be subjected to this as voters, as people of the United States. And Trump is one thing, but the miserable record of the Democratic Party, the lackluster response that we have gotten from the Green Party and other parties also yes. is unacceptable. And this is a time to have a serious reckoning. Are you doing anything or you're not? Because in the mood that we're in, we're in the mood to just lop heads off. We don't care whether the new people have experience or not, but we're sick and tired of, you know, Nancy Pelosi is, what exactly are her directives to the Democratic Party? And why are people sitting around waiting until she has an epiphany and has an idea?
Exactly.
We have to clean house. And this should be the message. Nobody in office, except, of course, those who know they're doing a good job, nobody in office should feel safe. You ought to just clean
That's right.
house.
That's right. And already there's discussion about if the Democrats retake the House, that Nancy Pelosi would become Speaker again. That is absolutely unacceptable.
Well, and, there you are. We have a lot of, it's not just about Trump. It's about the rotten parties that we've had and put up with and supported, by the way. And
That's
they
right.
have not really done a good job. They've got to go. So we ought to make it really clear. This isn't just about fighting Trump. This is about fighting a rotten political system. And we're sick of you guys, and you got to go. So
Absolutely.
We're sharpening the knives to cut the ribbons loose. Thank you so much
for
your call.
I agree completely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, Bill. Bye-bye. Maat from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, grateful to get through. Greetings to the beloved family. I hope I can stay on the line because something goes beep, beep, and then I'm off. But I want to address the concerns of yesterday and some of the misguided aspects of the two brothers calling in. But first of all, let me address Trump. As you shared with us, his original name, a.k.a. Trump. This guy is so unfit that when he got elected, once I could, you know, get out of the bed, I went to the tarot. Now, I don't know much about the tarot except that they have some powerful symbols. And the card that came up for me was the fool that's got one of his feet off the mountain, off the precipice. And the problem is every aspect of him says that we are in existential danger. So the brother who suggests, and I had thought that too, that when you press the nuclear button, there's other people involved. Now maybe Mattis, like he did about assassinating Bashir in Syria, could speak up, but he actually can press the nuclear button. So we have some oneness that's perhaps early stages of dementia or even demented. This is somebody who is, in terms of temperament, in terms of intellect, in terms of emotional intelligence. I mean, this guy stores at, they talk about zero tolerance. I mean, this is zero for him. And let me address the brother who seemed to be, and I love all of them, but and I learned from them too, but when he was suggesting that, and seemingly repeating these right-wing talking points about the Russia investigation. I mean, you know, it's documented. There's Russian roulette by Korn and Ignatius. There's collusion by Harding. There's a new one, House of Trump, Putin, House of Trump. I mean, you know, and of course, Mueller has brought 191 plus indictments, and 12 of them with the 26 against the Russians are documented where you could see that they had some profound abilities in terms of their senior military intelligence. And, of course, he's a grifter. So when you have a grifter who has 6, some say 11 bankruptcies after the casino business folded, he had to essentially sell his condos. The second one in New York, taking LLCs, meaning anonymous purchases, to launder a whole lot of Russian money. And it gets worse from there. So in terms of what we can do about it, first of all, I'm inspired by the Buddha. So he talks about we can't be afraid, because the Buddha refers to the gesture of fearlessness. That's how we have to deal with it. But if for those of us who studied the 30s, we're right here. You know, I mean, and Eutrice, I also want to suggest, because I'm real tired over here, but I had C-SPAN on watching a very interesting panel regarding some of the people who are against, and of course the supporters too, but some of the people that were against this Supreme Court nomination. Oh, that's a whole nother story that we can talk about another time.
Well, here's the thing. You've, in the short span that you've been on the air, you've touched on several different things. And that, to me, is something we have to deal with. We have to learn a new discipline of what is important and what is not. And what is important and what is not has strictly to do with our interests. The Supreme Court fight, as I've explained before, we don't have a penny in that fight. That's not our fight. We ought to be clear. This is white America's fight. They're not discussing issues relating to the entire country, the issue of criminal justice reform, the issue of education reform, all these things. They're not discussing these things. We are not even on the table. We're not even in their minds. So we are crazy to go along and envelop ourselves in a fight that isn't ours. This has been one of the most poignant indicators of racism still existing in this country. You would believe there is no other community to be concerned about except whites in America and what they're concerned about. And what they are concerned about is what the presumption is we should all be concerned about. What are our concerns and where do they appear on the spectrum of concerns? They don't appear. All right. This is white America. At this very moment, we are looking at the evolved racism, where in your face, they're discussing things as if you're not here.
Mm-hmm.
You don't exist. Your issues and your problems and your concerns, they don't exist. Your job as a non-white person at this time in America is to subsume whatever it is you consider important and adopt the overarching concerns, which are primarily the concerns of whites in America. Imagine that. You're talking to a U.S. Supreme Court and even black people in the U.S. Senate are questioning him, the candidate, in terms of what is of interest to white America. We are nowhere in the consciousness of either the Democrats or the Republicans. Nowhere. So we should be very careful not to involve ourselves or to understand the lay of the land as such, that this continues to be America's concern, white America's concern with itself, has nothing to do with, quote, America, unquote, because as they see it, they are America.
Well,
you show me where in the spectrum of discussion you have something specific about blacks and the black world or the Latino world. Nothing. Nothing. And this is why I talk about voting. Why am I going to vote against my own interests? Or why am I going to endorse my absence from the political realm? You're not discussing anything that relates to me. Nothing that is important to you as the ruling class has anything to do with me. So why am I going to endorse my absenteeism from politics? No, I'll watch you guys fight, do whatever it is you got to do. But in the meantime, I keep encouraging folks to mind your own business. Understand what is important to you and see if you can deal with that. Don't get involved until they recognize that there are other people in this room. You understand? And from my perspective, it continues. Nobody's fighting for the poor. Nobody's fighting for people of color in this country. We're nowhere in the conversation.
Eutrice, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Well, it did come up in terms of this panel. There was an outstanding professor right here at NYU, Professor Murray. And I would suggest, I hope she's on YouTube or whatever, but you need to listen to her because women are also being excluded and taken back to a time where,
But I'm not talking about the occasional discussion.
Yeah,
structural change. The Democratic Party has forsaken blacks, Latinos, the poor. They are fully engaged in the flip side of the Donald Trump regime.
Travesty, right.
Let's make money and whatnot. So I'm not talking about us having an occasional discussion. I'm saying we have no structural response.
Well, the reason why it's important to sometimes listen to that occasional discussion and follow the threads like you do is because of the end game. What to me is apparent at this point is that the response of so-called white people, because they created this identity, right, is because they cannot turn back the browning, as it were, of America coming in a few years, that they are setting up an apartheid system. And
I disagree entirely. We cannot blame white America. White America is just doing what comes naturally. It is seeing to its interests. It is seeing to the perpetuation of its dominance in the society. And it already has any number of templates to do that. What really grinds my gears is that we continue to have the wrong response. We're not acting like our lives are depending on anything. We're not acting like we're in crisis. We're not acting like our lives are on the line. Not at all. We're not acting like there is a state of emergency where we are concerned. We are not acting like it.
You mean solutions? Are you asking about solutions?
I'm talking about one solution is to act like you understand what the heck is going on. And not wait for have people tell you what is going on. You do not need any further instructions. I keep saying we're the only people, I think, who don't need anything else. We have more than enough theoretical preparation. We have more than enough evidence. We have more than enough advisors. We have more than enough studies. But we have no movement. This is the time, especially, you see how people react when they believe themselves to be in crisis and their interests are on the line. All friendliness and whatnot, all of that is suspended. And they get down to the business of, look, this is what we got to get done. You're either with it or you're not. But we mean business. We have to suspend all of this and get serious. But we're not acting like we are in crisis. We're not acting like we see ourselves as being in danger. We just wait and see what they tell us the outcome is. And based on that, we will fashion something of a life. We're wrong. We are wrong. We are the ones who are guilty. And let's not mistake that. We are guilty of refusing to take our interests seriously and to pursue our interests as if we understand our survival depends on it. Thanks for your call. Okay. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Idris.
Hey, wonderful Harvey. What's happening in your neck of the woods?
Well, first of all, I just want to say bless you and your vast Progressive Radio Network audience. And today I'd like to talk about another source of clean, renewable energy I call electro gyms. There's millions of people who love to exercise, and I say why not generate electricity at the same time? And for example, just one of these exercise companies, 24-hour fitness gyms, has more than 3 million members. And these nationwide exercise clubs can become electro gyms. Many forms of mechanical energy can be translated into electrical energy. So it's time to redesign exercise machines so they can generate clean, renewable electricity. Instead of exercise bicycles, they can turn them into electro bikes. Stairmaster exercise machines can become electro stairmasters. And they can also be electro rowers and electro treadmills that can be used to generate electricity. And people who belong to electro gyms can be issued electro gym cards. And electro gym cards have a memory chip embedded in them. And when the card is inserted into any of the electrolyzers, a record of the time, date, and amount of electricity they generate is recorded and stored on the electro card's memory chip. And as people move from one electrolyzer machine to another, they remove their electro cards and insert them into the next electrolyzer card slot. And at the end of the month, their electro card information is tallied up for credits that are issued based on the amount of energy he or she generated while working out that month. And electro card credits can be redeemed for services and products and amenities like discounts on electro gym memberships, dues and fees, personal training classes, sports apparel and accessories, health food, beverages, power vacations, or donated to ecological and charitable causes. And the generated electricity can be sold to the local utility for redistribution. And I believe that electro gym members would really appreciate the concept of getting in shape while reducing their carbon footprint. So electro gym centers will really help to keep Americans and America in great shape. And I think this is a win-win situation.
Well, there's no shortage of great ideas coming from you. That's for sure. Thanks, Harvey. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Jeff from New Jersey, what have you to say today on Free Your Mind?
Oh, well, I'm going to say what I said maybe a month or two ago. And that is to go back to church, because, and I say that one in a spiritual sense, because I think we need to have a collective spirit, in order to change things. Also a place to meet like minds, also a place that can be a school, also a place that can be a charity, that we can feed the homeless, that we can clothe the homeless. And in some churches, we can even house the homeless. So if we go back to church, we are allowed to operate outside the government system. And that is one of the ways that we can combat some of the crap that's coming out of Washington, is to go into our communities, use our churches as our resources, and distribution and education places. And like I said, you can fashion a whip and invite the politicians down. If they don't meet the snuff, well, you put it on them. That's all. But I believe that the churches are going to be a way to go, because that's in a lot of communities. We don't have community centers anymore, so they've become the churches. Churches traditionally in black communities have always been the centerpieces of politics. And social change. So I think we need to go back to that, and not just black culture, but all cultures. Go back to that. Go back to a way of having your community come together and take care of the things in your community that need to be taken care of. And you can do that through the church, through donations, through, like I said, a community workforce. You know, you get together, put everything, you know, people get together, and, you know, let's raise a barn. So if you're not raising a barn, let's raise some houses. And I raise some houses that sweep the streets, you know, do what we have to do. But I believe going back to the church is going to be key, both for our own sanity.
What do you say to the observation that what you're making, the suggestion you're making, just substitutes one form of control for another?
Not because you can control what happens in your church. If you get up and you walk to your church, or even drive a few blocks to your church is in your neighborhood. You can control the people in the church. They need to live where you live. Their kids need to go to school where your kids go to school. You see them every day. There's a bit of a responsibility. Also, come through the church, because you know that there's a young man that's in a young woman in there that they would like a pastor of the church, and they can be brought up in the church, they can be brought up in the community, so you have opportunities to mold them. Also, when you're talking about that, you can recruit your police officers, you can recruit your political people out of your own church. You know, they become community representatives as they grow up, and people begin to know them and know the work that they do in the community, and they can see the value of the work they do in the community. Not someone that's coming from outside, but you have more accountability to these people because they're neighborhood people. Like I said, they live next door to you. You know their business. You know their parents. You know their children. So it's an accountability. I remember when I grew up, our teachers lived in our neighborhood. They went to church with our parents. We did not act up in class because they had the authority to do some things that teachers can't do today, but they had the authority, and they also had the contact. So it wasn't like, oh, we didn't miss the phone call. No, we'd see them in the Kmart, shopping.
But we've been seeing some contradictions where this is concerned, in that churches are part of a hierarchy of their own that is not necessarily accountable to us. They make decisions. They have veto power over what happens in their churches. And we've seen example after example. Right now, every single parish in the state of New York has been subpoenaed, for example, to deal with this question of sex abuse. And that is because the hierarchy of the church has made it so that all Catholic churches toe the line. So we see many examples of in which, and I agree with you, the church has immense potential for leadership in our communities, but even that has been corrupted in so many ways by the centralization of power and the tendency of churches to just dismiss what the people want as being, secondary to their survival.
Well, the beautiful thing about that is that we have the power. We have the power. If you don't go to the church, they have no parish. They have to sell the building. If you don't go to the, if the Catholics in the area decide, I'm not supporting this church until they change what they do, then they can become Protestants. Or practice a Catholic religion outside of the Vatican. You don't have to be sanctified to do God's work. You don't have to be sanctified by a man to do God's work. You're sanctified by God. You have a higher authority than they do. So just like everything else in our political system, if we do not participate in it, it will fall apart. If we don't like the banks, then we create our own community banks. If we don't like the other government structures, you know what? Let's bypass them. Bypass them, and then the second part of that is to be involved and to vote and to prepare, which means that when we groom people and we don't like what the housing authority is doing down there, you know what? Let's take care of the homeless people ourselves until we can get someone into office that will change what the housing authority does, until we find a candidate that we can support. But once we have a base of taking care of ourselves and taking care of our communities, the rest of that will fall into place. Because if we're taking care of ourselves, we don't have to participate in those things. And when we're talking about, like I said, with the Catholic Church, you just stop going. Just stop going.
Well,
they have to close down.
You put your ideas out.
They won't be able to abuse children.
Well, you put your ideas out, and they're good ideas. And we will know what people are thinking, but they're very good ideas, many of them. I don't agree with all of them, but I see they're brilliant ideas, if only people could also see it that way. Thank you so much for your call, Jeff. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon to the PRN family and my beautiful sister. How are
you
doing? I'm in total agreement with you. This thing about the Supreme Court and the presidential, that's none of our business. It has nothing to do with us, because either parties that takes office, they have one agenda, is to crush us. It's as simple as that. So it's what we should be concerned with is what we are, what's our own agenda, and work on it. That's it. Simple. Now, there are a lot of callers that say that spoke about we should start this, we should start that. But we already have this. We are listening to PRN. I know people are going to say that. Oh, there goes a PRN guy. He is. That's true. But we could make a party out of this, because the reason why the people are in the United States are so confused and abused is because of ignorance. The mechanism is already put in place. All we have to do is finance it. And promote it. For example, I got T-shirts, caps, cards. And as a matter of fact, when I'm going right now to the phone company to get, bargain with the phone lines, and I'm going to teach my friends how to get the program on PRN. I'm going to do that, and it, as a matter of fact, it is cheaper, because I'm going to do a three-line thing. Normally, I pay $50. Now, I'm going to be paying like $30. You see, these are the things that we need to do. So when people speak, we know that the information that comes from PRN is vetted. You can't find these cheap in lies. Well, I'm only listening to two. It's you, Gary Wolf. You know what I'm saying? But that's a source of valid information. The media, we are paying our monies to these people to lie and disrespect. To me, I think that's very, very insulting. And we're paying them. And I'm sure there are a lot of people within the so-called mainstream media that hate what they're doing, but they got to have a paycheck. You see what I'm saying? But I'm totally in agreement with you. That's none of our business. I have no interest in it. Okay, my sister, you and my family, have a nice weekend. All right?
All right. Thank you, Willie. Thanks so much for your call today. Very uplifting. Veronica from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good day. How are you, beloved?
Fine. Thank you, Veronica. How about you?
or taking it one day at a time. What can we do? Fight the good fight.
That's it.
I'm calling because your previous caller or two, what he expressed, I am thinking of the Freedom Party. I'm thinking of writing in candidates. And I'm tired of, you know, doing the same things and expecting different results. You have discussed this, and many people have called in, that the system is not working, so we need to do other things. However, it is already written. We already know the way to, you know, rally the people. Now, we have some things in position, and we're not using it. You know, we have seen some of these organizations fail us. I think the Black Caucus was mentioned, and, you know, I remember G2YUC. He has a feeding program where you pay $30 for some groceries. You know, I don't see many people using it. It still exists. He's no longer here, but some of these organizations still exist. We are watching people throughout the nation, the prisons, on strike throughout America. How do we support them? You know, by, if it's not a bill that we must pay, utilities and so forth, there's no reason to support our own enslavement, our own demise. We are tired of the war on the poor, because that's what's going on. So we need to support different organizations. We need to support the CEMOTAPs throughout America. You know, we need to support the organizations that are supporting Zimbabwe. You know, that is the beacon. That is a light still. We need to support the people that are resisting the land grabs and the resources that they are continuously stealing throughout the world. So the organizations like the UNIA, we need to support them. They exist. They meet regularly, you know, throughout New York. And we need to stand by each other, because as the caller had said, we must help our elderly people, you know. We must help our children. The schools have to go back to after-school programs. The churches must be used, if that is their choice, the mosques and so forth. All institutions that you do contribute to, that you do attend, have to do something more than they're doing right now. Some of them are doing what they should be doing. Very few, but we have to support what we do have, and we will win. There's no other way, because, you know, when conditions have us pressed against the wall, you fight back, and you must fight back by any and every means. I thank you so much, my love, for your time.
Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful day.
Thank you for lending your voice to us today.
I'm going to write in Alton Maddox for governor of New York City. I'm going to write in the Freedom Party. I'm going to write in Charles Barron. And for those that I do not like and I don't see a candidate I'm going to support, I'm going to put Asada. I'm going to put Francis Cress Welsing. I am going to make sure that if my children do not become the warriors of yesterday, I'm going to uplift Olombe. If we all worked just a little to become the next Malcolm, the next, the best of the best, you know, because they're still here amongst us. I thank you so much.
Thank you for calling in and contributing today. West from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yusris. Can I be heard?
Thank you. What a voice. You have a great voice for radio.
Thank you.
I have a great face for radio.
I have to say, Yusris, I haven't spoken to you in a while, but you know, I came into this discussion with the third caller past, the gentleman who was speaking about the churches, and I think that initiated my call, and I feel like I'm sort of between a rock and a hard place, because I don't know what you said an hour ago or 40 minutes ago. So let me just address it from where I heard it. The gentleman who spoke about the churches, as a youngster, and I'm well beyond being a youngster, I'm in my 60s, but as a youngster, I grew up in the church. It was something that was a very important part of my life, very important part of my family's life, my extended family. Everyone is in the church. And, Eutrice, I have to tell you, I haven't walked into a church that wasn't for a funeral or a wedding in about 40 years. And I know that if you're speaking about churches and you're speaking about doing something that's going to work for the collective, you're going to miss a lot of people. For those of us who a few weeks ago saw the pastors that met with the number 45 and, you know, talked about his efforts to address the incarceration rates and what have you of non-white people. Those men make me sick to my stomach because I can't imagine that their agenda was not a self-serving agenda. And what I've come to understand is for many, many, many of the reverends and ministers I've come into contact with, not all, I've met some amazing religious people, but I've met many who are self-serving, many who will present to me that the most important book anyone can read, with literally billions of books on the planet, is the Bible. Now, I happen to be a older brother of a young man who is a pastor, and I love him dearly. And I know for a fact that if my brother has read 5 books in his life, 3 of them had to be comic books. That's not what he does. He reads the Bible, and he speaks to people from the Bible, without truly having understanding of what the Bible is all about and what it represents. So I can look at my little brother and see that anyone who sits in his congregation will be in front of a very good man, but a man who is very limited in terms of his understanding of the world we live in. And I can multiply him by many, many, many pastors. One of the callers also mentioned the racism in the situation we deal with. I happen to have read Mr. Fuller's book many, many times. I know you're familiar with Mr. Fuller.
Neely Fuller. And, yes.
Yeah, Neely Fuller. So he talks about the establishment, the maintenance, the expansion and the refinement of the system of racism, white supremacy. And I have come and believe for the last 10 years that we live in a refined system. The racism is all around us, but we spend so much time trying to figure out a way out of this plastic bag that we're punching and not making any real progress. We don't move forward. I don't know what the absolute answer to that is, but I do know that we got to stop calling ourselves a community until such time as we behave as a community. We have to stop looking at one another as potential adversaries and begin to see each other as committed to the same goal, committed to the same end goal, and begin to speak about those things. And we can do them in different places. You gave us a tremendous platform for that. But there are others that do the same thing, and we just need to take advantage of what you've presented and what so many others have presented and begin to work towards a solution instead of simply constantly stirring it up and never looking to see where the solution is. Now, we can't deal with everything at once. We have 9 areas of activity that we need to address, and we need to be careful and make sure that what we're talking about is focused on a specific area and move forward. And you answer the question, you address the problem, then you move on to the next. We don't tend to do that. We have so many things coming at us that we can't take the time to beat one down before we go to the next. It's driving us crazy. But here again, I apologize to you for coming in late. I was doing an interview before your program started and didn't hear everything. I promise I'll do better next time. But I'm,
well, you did very well in reintroducing concepts that we really need to examine to see the contradictions that we ourselves are contributing to our condition. We are making up things that are not serving us well. Exactly. And we are following bad example and bad information. We're just not working right. That doesn't mean we can't fix it, but it means that we have to see where we are going wrong ourselves. Thank you so much, West, for your contribution today. Thank you all for your contributions, because this is what the program is for, to trade with each other our best ideas and opinions, and it is exactly the best thing in peer-to-peer education. Have yourselves a great weekend. Surround yourselves with people who bring positivity to your life, and then we'll see each other Monday and start this whole thing all over again.